Okay, I'm here again with Lynn Lott and Jane Nelson, and we're talking about teenagers. And I think we're going to get started this time by reading a question or two, email questions that we received. And we'll just get right into this one that we received here is titled Smart Mouth and Attitude. And so I'll just read the question here. I was just wondering if you could help me choose a book that I should start with. I have an 11-year-old son and a 3-year-old son. I have tried everything with the 11-year-old. Positive discipline, grounding, counseling, and nothing seems to work. I am having such a struggle getting him to realize the consequences of his actions. I always stress to him that he needs to make good choices and ultimately controls how situations are handled. Everything you ask of him requires, a smart mouth comment or attitude. He has just started to get into trouble at school. He quotes the Constitution that he should have the right to free speech. He says how he can voice his side if it always perceived as talking back. I want to raise a responsible child and feel that I am failing. And so thank you in advance for advice. So there's a question we received over email. So
my first response to that, this is Lynn talking, is that if you are continually explaining to your child some concept, like he's responsible for his actions and you've been doing this for 11 years, he's got the idea down. So repeating it for 11 more years isn't going to help the situation. And I would immediately stop, giving him what I call the lecture about the future and about the rest of his life. And that whatever you're doing, it's got to be something, and we'll get into that, that you can do in the moment. You need something for that moment that's going to be effective.
Which would be?
Oh, well, I mean, I could go on, just off the top of my head. First of all, I would start with the feelings. If my kid is saying something to me and we end up in a fight, I think instead of making my comments, I would say, it sounds like you're feeling really upset about that. I'd sure like to hear more about it. Or it sounds like this is a big issue for you and you're frustrated because I don't quite get what you're trying to tell me. Try me again. So I would go straight for the feelings. We call this the I feel formula. And the kind of mirror side of the how I'm feeling is how you might be feeling, making a guess. And if we have a repeating problem with our kid, even that 3-year-old, chances are we haven't learned how to have a feeling vocabulary in the family, saying how we feel, but also trying to mirror to our kids how they might be feeling. So I'd start right there. The other thing is that if I have a tendency to have arguments with my kids will always end up with the last word, even if I think I'm having the last word. So one way to stop exercising their argue muscle is to let your kids have the last word. Because every time you argue with your kids, you're exercising that muscle to argue.
One of the things I'd like to say is that I hear parents complain all the time that my child won't listen. And the truth is, it's because they don't have an example of what listening is about, because parents don't listen. They lecture. And one of the ways to make sure you listen is to validate what the kids are saying, my understanding of what you're saying is this. It's going into feelings too, but what they're saying. And the other thing that's so interesting to me is when parents say, I want my children to understand the consequences of their choices, but they don't do anything to help their children understand except lecture.
Or punish.
And if you have ever noticed what happens to kids when you start lecture, their eyes glaze over. And the only reason you can still see their eyes is because if they look away, which they'd really like to do, parents say, you look at me while I'm talking to you. So they have found this way of just going away, even though they're still there looking at you. And so, again, we say this so often, but to help children explore the consequences of their choices, you really have to help them explore.
Okay, Jane, let's you and I try to set up a little role play to show how this would work.
Okay.
Can you think of a way this might have happened, like in this question about the 11-year-old? What do you think might be an issue that they would be arguing over? You've got kids that age. What would be an issue they'd be arguing over?
Well, a big issue that was mentioned in that question that a lot of parents have trouble with is problems at school.
Okay.
Where they're not treating the teachers with respect. They're talking back. They're getting sent to the office, and you know, you're getting calls from the principal, and that seems pretty common.
Okay. Can we do that as a role play?
Well, right. And how about if I just be the kid where I'm saying, how can I have free speech if every time I have free speech, I'm told that I'm being a smart aleck?
You know, first of all, I'd like to object that you get to be the kid and that I have to be the parent, because the person who gets to be the kid is definitely going to have the most fun in this situation. But I'll tell you what. Yeah, you can be the kid where the parent does all of the things that parents do that I call parenting from the big parenting book in the sky. It's like the conventional wisdom of what parents think they're supposed to do. Let's do that one first, and then we'll role play it another way to show a better way to do it.
Okay.
Okay, so you start. Okay, so, you know, I got a call from the school that you were mouthing off to your teacher and that you ended up in the classroom. Now, you understand the consequences of your action. I mean, you have choices here. And if you're going to be a success, you know, when you're a grown-up, you're going to have to start learning to treat people with respect.
It's a free country, and I have a right to voice my opinion.
Yeah, I understand it's a free country, but that doesn't mean that you can treat people disrespectfully and that you can mouth off
in school. The teacher was treating me disrespectfully. The teacher was mouthing off at me.
Well, we don't do this in our family. You know, if someone's treating us disrespectfully, we don't argue back.
Where have you been, Mom? I'm arguing back with you right now. You may think we don't, but we're doing it.
Well, I don't argue with you.
You're not arguing with me right now?
I do not argue with you. I'm merely trying to impart parental wisdom, and I am your mother, and I would like you to listen to what I have to say,
because I've been around a lot.
Okay, sound familiar to anyone? Probably. So shall we replay it? And this time you be the parent, because you're saying parents have to help kids explore.
Okay.
Okay? So I'll be the kid.
Okay.
So why don't you start off the same way that you got a note from the school?
Okay.
Okay.
Lynn, I got a note from the teacher that you have been mouthing off at school, and you know that's not acceptable. You know we don't do that in our family.
Well, you should have heard what the teacher was saying. I mean, I'm not going to sit there and let someone treat me that way.
Well, you know, I'd like to hear what the teacher was saying. What was the teacher saying?
Well, I can't exactly remember, but I think it was something very nice.
And how did that make you feel?
Well, I can't remember.
Well, do you know what? It sounds to me like maybe we need to wait for a little while, maybe in 30 minutes or maybe at dinner time. And you could just think about what really went on, because I would really like to hear your side of it. Because you know that you're the most important person to me. You're much more important than your teacher to me.
Okay.
She's getting speechless.
I am speechless. And now can I be Lynn for a minute?
Sure.
Because I'd like to tell you what was happening inside of me when I was playing the kid. First of all, the reason I was mouthing off in the classroom is because I get all the other kids in the room to laugh at me and notice me, and then I get sent to the office, and when I go to the office, I kind of get to miss the class, and I get to sit there, and the secretaries are really nice to me, and the counselor comes and talks to me. So, but I don't really want to tell you all this, and in fact, I hadn't even really realized this until you said to me, what was the teacher saying? And I realized the teacher really wasn't saying anything. But I didn't think I was going to exactly share that with you. So I was speechless with your curiosity. And actually, if you don't say another word, maybe, just maybe, I'll think before I open my mouth at school again. Maybe.
Hmm.
That was very effective, Jane.
I think that that's one of the things that most parents don't realize, is that sometimes just creating that relationship, letting you know I care about you, that you're more important to me even than the teacher, is enough to stop and make kids think and take more responsibility than when we just lecture. All they want to do is defy us and defeat us.
It made me think. That's mm-hmm. exactly what was happening. I can't exactly say to you I'm being a cut up in class because I like being the class clown. Not yet. But maybe that would come.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have that awareness and you don't lecture me, I might think about what I want to do about it, even at 11, even at 3.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I would like to point out about this is that sometimes parents say that doing positive discipline is difficult. And the point is that wasn't difficult. This idea of just listening, saying, tell me more, and yet punishment is easy, but it doesn't get the long-term results. And that's what we're talking about, is long-term.
It's true in a way that punishment is easy because you don't have to think about it. But think of all those emails that we get from parents who say, I was punishing my kids and it didn't work, so I punished them more, and it didn't work, so I punished them longer, and it didn't work, and louder. And I was so happy when I, you know, started using your ideas because I didn't like how I felt
exactly
when I was punishing my kids.
Exactly.
Okay, let's move on to the second question. This one is titled Power Struggles with Teenager. And the question reads, I don't know how to answer my 14-year-old daughter. When she asks me a question about going somewhere or can I do this, the other kids do. I answer no and explain to her why.
Can we stop the question right there?
Okay, you want to take the first part?
And just talk about that part of the question?
Okay, that's to the first part of the
you
question.
You know, when I was listening to the question, I thought it was interesting that the parent says, I don't know how to answer my daughter. Like she's looking for some help on how to answer. And what she's doing is what most people do when they don't know how to do something. They lead with the no. It just comes out. It's automatic. And parenting by the no is pretty uncreative and it's pretty ineffective. So maybe we could just talk about why she would first say no and maybe come up with some ideas of what she could say for an answer instead of the no. Does that work for you, Jane?
Right, yes.
Okay. So, I mean, my first thought about why she says the no is she doesn't know what else to do. And my second thought is that she's in a rush and she doesn't want to take the time to find out, you know, a little bit more about what her kid wants. I mean, it's almost like she's feeling irritated and stressed and put upon. And my third thought is that maybe she thinks it's her job to be kind of like the dictator and say no to everything. And also maybe she's mad at her kid because maybe she asked her kid to do something that her kid didn't do. And now she doesn't feel like doing anything nice for her kid.
Well, there is another possibility too, because in the question it says, I explained to her why. And so there's another thing that parents do is they parent from fear. And so maybe the why is because she's afraid of what it is that her daughter wants to do, that she's afraid that there'll be some danger involved.
Yeah, and I'm sure all of this is part of it. I guess how I would want to look at it is this parenting on the fly, because if you don't have time to take a step back, we tend to be reactive to our kids instead of proactive.
Yes.
And so one thing I'd want to do is put a little space between the question and the answer. And maybe what this mom could do is say, I need a little time to think about it and I need a little bit more information. Let me finish what I'm doing here and, you know, let's sit down at the table for a few minutes and you can tell me more about it.
Okay. And another possibility is she's even when she says in there and I explain to her why, this comes the old lecture method of parenting too. So another possibility that she might sit down and say, do you have any ideas why this might be a problem for me? And let the daughter explain what maybe the mother's fears are, because they probably know. She probably knows.
Let me go ahead and read that part of the question where she says, she gets all upset and says, you just don't understand. And then I say, no, you don't understand. And I've explained to her over and over and over. Then she says, I can't wait till I'm older. I won't have to follow your rules anymore.
Okay, so there's another part. There's a lot of parenting things in that very short question that are going on, and that is that we don't want our kids to argue, but we argue with them. We want them to listen, but we don't listen to them. And so instead of saying, no, you don't understand, for if a mother would say, you know, you're probably right, I probably don't, and I'd really love to have a discussion about this because I'd like to know what you have to say.
Let's role play this piece of it. Where we talk about finding out what each person is feeling and thinking.
Okay.
Do you want to be the kid or the parent?
I don't care.
Okay. So be the kid and say, you don't understand.
Mom, you don't understand. All the other kids are going, you just don't understand.
Well, you know what? I would like to understand. Can you tell me more about it? It's been a long time since I was 14.
Well, that's for sure.
Okay, so why do you want to do this? What is it that you want to do, first of all?
Well, I want to go to this concert. And all my friends are going. And it's cool, Mom. It's just real cool.
Well, tell me more about the concert.
Well, everybody's going.
Well, I mean, when is the concert? What time of day?
Saturday night. Okay. And, you know, it might last a long time because everybody's gone. It's just
Where is the concert?
It's at the stadium.
Okay. And is it like some big popular, you know, groups right now?
Oh, yeah. It's this real cool popular group.
Okay. Is it a group that you like a lot?
Yeah. I listen to their records. Everybody's going, Mom. Everybody. It's everybody's doing it. Be cool, Mom.
Okay. Well, I know you think I'm a little fuddy-duddy about this, but it doesn't work for me to have you go somewhere that I know nothing about. But I would like to talk this over with Dad, and maybe Dad and I can attend this concert with you.
Mom. Oh, Mom. Oh, Mom. Okay. I mean, first of all, I don't want you in my pocket everywhere I go. What do you mean I can't go anywhere? No.
Wait a second. You can go lots of places where I know that you're going to be safe and I know what happens. But this is new territory for me. I know you're ready for it, but I'm not. And trust me on this, Dad and I could go and you would never see us, nor would any of your friends see us. They wouldn't even know we're there. But by us going, we would get a feeling of what this is and how it works, and we would know anything we need to do to help you be safe.
Do I know what I'm feeling?
Yeah.
Next time, I'm not even going to ask you. I'm going to tell you I'm going to a friend's, and then I'm going to go to the concert, because I don't want you there. That's the most uncool thing. I don't care if you're in the way up in the seats. That's just so uncool to have my parents there.
Well, actually, this is what we did when our son, who is now in his 30s, wanted to go to his first concert. And he may have felt that way, but he decided that was how he was going to get there. And the concert was an hour and a half away from our house, and there was no way he knew we were going to let him drive that far with people, you know, who were a little bit older than him who could drive. So we actually went to the concert, and he never saw us. But boy, did we get an, you know, eye-opening experience about what exactly happens more in the parking lot than in the concert. And it really helped us have conversations with him afterwards about, you know, which concerts he could go to and what we would feel comfortable with. And it seemed like it worked out really well for us. I'm not saying that a kid might not feel the way you're feeling, but I think as a parent, it's okay to continue the dialogue that it might be just too big of a leap for you to send your kid off to one of these concerts. And your kid may be ready, but you may not be ready.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, Mom, what are your issues about the concert?
I'm afraid of drugs.
What do you think will happen?
I'm afraid that you're going to start taking drugs and become a drug addict.
Oh, well, I think a lot of kids use drugs at the concerts, but I don't really want to use drugs.
Why not? What makes you think you won't if you're there?
Because I've seen a lot of kids using drugs and they all act so stupid, and I don't really want to be that way.
Wow. Sounds like you're really thinking for yourself and what you want in your life and what works for you and
Mom,
what doesn't.
Drugs are everywhere. I mean, you know, if I want drugs, I can get them anywhere. It would take me about 5 minutes.
Oh, you mean you wouldn't have to go to a concert to get them?
No, Mom, I could get them at school. I mean, you know. I just don't think I really want to do that right now. Maybe someday, but not now.
Well, I have to tell you that what makes me feel better, and it really assures my fears, is to know that you're thinking about it for yourself and that you realize that the kids are acting stupid and that's not what you want. So,
well, I'm glad you're taking the time to listen to me for a change.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, she wraps up her question by saying, but if we buy her something or take her places, then I'm the best mom ever. What do I do? So is it appropriate if you're doing things for your kids to expect things from your kids in return as far as behavior or?
I think it's natural. Appropriate wouldn't be a word I would use. It's probably human nature. You know, I did this for you, you do this for me. But I think kids need to do things to contribute because they live in the house. And I think you need to do things to help your kids out because they're only 14 and they don't have a car and they can't drive. And you may want to have a certain amount of presence so that your kids still need you. It doesn't have to be set up as a manipulation.
Yeah, you know, there's two things I'd like to say about this. And I think if we take it to another area, it's like we teach that allowances and chores should not be related because every child should have some allowances and decide what they're going to do with that. And every child should do chores because they're part of the family. And in this way, it's like also that sometimes kids need our help and we don't need to have it tie, okay, I'll help you if you help me, but they need to help us at other times. And this gets right into the individuation process, where this is a time where kids are individuating big time, finding out who they are separate from us. And they would like to pretend they don't need us, but they really still do need us very much. And so knowing that this is not a personal insult to us, this idea that, yeah, I need you when I need you and I don't want you when I don't, that's just normal. It's not personal.
You know, the other thing I'm thinking about this is maybe because I have a 3-year-old grandson, but I, again, look at all the things that parents do for little kids. You know, they sign them up for swim classes and little kickers, and they take them to the museum, and they're constantly doing things for little kids. They wouldn't feel resentful that they have to drive their little kid everywhere or take them places. But for some reason, when their kids turn 14, they have a lot of resentment. If the kids want to ride to the movies, or if the kids want to go to the mall for the afternoon, or if the kids want them, you know, you to go shopping with them and help them pick out an outfit for something. It's so age appropriate to need and want those things. And in a way, the kids are saying they still want their parent. They still need their parent. So I think we should continue to think about our kids needing us and not be so resentful about it, and make time in our life to do those things for our kids instead of seeing it as a hassle or seeing it as a manipulation. And I think we should set it up so our kids don't have to manipulate to get it. For me, that would be calendaring with our kids. It would be sitting down once a week at a family meeting and just saying to the kid, what kind of things do you have coming up for the week? What kind of things are you going to need? Let's figure out who can ride. Let's figure out how you can get there. And, you know, at that same meeting, you might also be talking about the chore schedule. Not because if you do chores, I'll do this. But again, as Jane is saying, you do chores because you're part of the family. And we take you places because you're 14, and these are the kind of interactions you need with your parents at this time.
So what about if you say, well, if you want me to take you to the mall, I had all this stuff planned. You know, I got to clean the house, I got to vacuum, I got to dust, I got to clean the kitchen. You know, the only way I'm going to be able to do that is if you help me get this done. And once it's done, then we can go.
It's getting closer, Ken, to how I might say it. I still don't like if you do this, I'll do that. It's kind of like, let's make a deal. I might more say, first we need to, and then we can. So, and again, I would hope that the family has some routine for doing cleanup. Like when our kids were teenagers, our deal was Saturday morning was what we call big cleanup morning. And everybody in the family would take 2 rooms of the house and we would clean them. We'd scrub floors and scrub toilets and vacuum. And we all knew that on Saturday morning between, say, 9 and 11, that was going to be the big cleanup. We knew that we didn't do other things during that time, and that if other things were going to happen, they could be scheduled later in the day.
And another way of putting this, it's almost the same thing but different words. There's something about if you, then, instead of as soon as then. Instead of, if you clean up your room, then we'll go. Instead of, oh, as soon as your room is cleaned, then we can go. If that has been set up in advance, that this is part of the deal, then, but it just is less threatening. It's less.
And I also think you can ask your kids for favors as much as they ask you for favors. I think you could say to your kids, I'd love to take you to the mall. I had all this stuff planned this morning that I need to get done, and I don't know if I would have time to take you to the mall. I have so many things. Is there anything on this list that you could help me with to make it go a little faster for me? Mm-hmm. So it's like asking your kid for a favor instead of this manipulation back and forth.
And if you look at the bottom line of what we're talking about, one is give and take, win-win, and the other is more of a fight. And it, you know, if you will, then I will. It's just so much different. It's a different feeling.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. That's about all the time we have for this time. So
thanks, Ken. Thank you.